right, I think it's time. It's 8 o'clock. It's time for our second of two debates. We could have... Thank you. So welcome to a debate for candidates for county attorney. We appreciate Mr. Swink and Mr. Daines for being with us, taking the time to be with us here tonight. We appreciate you for coming out and being with us tonight. I don't know if we still have people in the hall. Be helpful if you are able to move forward, if you can. That would allow people to slip in and sit in the back. We'll try to accommodate everyone, and we're very happy with the turnout. This is a debate presented by the Logan Herald Journal and Utah Public Radio. My name is Tom Williams. I am program director for Utah Public Radio, and I'll be moderating the debate tonight. We want to acknowledge Charlie McCollum. He's near the screen there. He is editor of the Logan Herald Journal. Thank you very much for organizing this debate. I'm not sure. And just coming in is our Utah Public Radio's new station manager, Peg Arnold, who comes to us from Wisconsin, just brand new on the job. Thank you. We'll take that. Thank you. So we appreciate all of you coming out. Just a couple of announcements. Utah Public Radio is broadcasting a number of debates. We're a part of the Vote Utah initiative leading up to Election Day. We have broadcast debates for 1st and 2nd congressional districts, and just tonight, a debate for Attorney General. And those first two debates are up on our website, upr.org. The Attorney General will be up soon. The upcoming debates will be Tuesday, October 7th for candidates for 3rd Congressional District. That's 6 p.m. on that Tuesday, coming Tuesday. And the 4th Congressional District will have a debate on Tuesday, October 14th, 6 p.m. Those are rebroadcast 11 a.m. the next day and will be up on our website as well. So as I said at the beginning of our first debate of the evening, I think it is very important that we have a civic dialogue like this. So we appreciate our candidates agreeing to debate and participate in a debate setting. And in a political climate that is sometimes quite toxic, it is good to recognize that it is a noble and not a easy thing to offer oneself a public office. So we appreciate our candidates. With that, let me just talk about the rules. This will be a one-hour debate. We will have opening statements of 3 minutes each. At the end of the debate, we'll have closing statements, 3 minutes each. We had a coin toss prior to the debate. It was determined that Mr. Swink would go first with opening statements. And therefore, since he went first, Mr. Daines would have the last word at the end of the debate. With the questions, we'll go back and forth. And we will have 90 seconds for each answer and then a 30-second rebuttal for each candidate thereafter for each question. If you'll direct your attention to the screen, we have our time system there, and we'd ask you to adhere to the time system as much as possible. So with that, with our appreciation for everyone for attending, for candidates for being here, we will open this debate. And the first word, 3 minutes opening statement, will be that of James Swink. Yes.
We have open audience questions
again. Oh, thank you. Appreciate you doing that. The clipboard would have remained here. So let me, as we did in the last debate, let me start here. It would wind its way around the room. That is a good point. Thank you. So you have opportunity to write questions for the candidates on the clipboard. And let me ask you, though, as you fill up a page, if you would forward that quickly up to me. That way it doesn't spend the whole evening going around. We don't get to the questions. So the questions are moderator's choice, but I am giving preference to questions from the audience here. So with that, the clipboard will be going around. You'll have opportunity to write down your question. We will go to opening statements, 3 minutes to Mr. Swink.
Privilege to be here tonight. First of all, thanks to the Herald Journal and to Utah Public Radio for providing this forum in this public building, and it's a privilege to be here. It's a privilege to serve as your county attorney. I'm a shy guy by nature, And I don't know if you noticed as you walked in tonight, but there was a class being offered on the west side of this building. It was an emotional support class. And I about did a hard left to go in there. But I'll do my best to get through this. I do also want to thank my family and my good wife. We just celebrated our 22nd wedding anniversary last month. And a lot has occurred since that time. We've both finished up our educations here at Utah State. My wife barely made it, had a baby, got under the radar, and we left and swallowed our Aggie pride and went down to BYU, of all places, for law school. And had a wonderful experience there. And while working there, I worked for Springville City. And it was a great opportunity to start to see the civil side of the law. And while there, I managed civil cases, quite frankly, and assisted with the civil cases. And I also wrote the city's general plan. And that dealt with zoning and other civil issues that became later much more important in my later career. After that, we, of course, graduated from law school and took a clerkship with Judge Granada in the 5th District in Idaho and had a wonderful experience and chose not to stay a second year that was offered, and we went to work for Weber County. And I started my criminal prosecution career there in Weber County, and it was a wonderful experience with wonderful folks. And after I left the Weber County Attorney's Office, I had the opportunity to come up here and start working for Scott Wyatt. And when I was elected to this position, I called Scott because he's one of my mentors, and I wanted some wisdom from him. And I said, where do you go now? What do you do? He says, whatever you want. I thought, that's a dumb answer, Scott. But I've since learned that there is so much to do. You can't do it all by yourself. And from managing your own personnel issues to the whole county's personnel issues, because you represent those different departments, to being involved in the criminal prosecutions that are demanding, you need help. And I have a wonderful staff, and I appreciate the staff that I have. They're diligent, they're hardworking, and they do a lot of good for the people of Cache County. There's a rumor out there that we get paid by the number of cases we win. Simply not true. When we go to trial, there are long days, long nights, and long weekends, quite frankly, and a lot of sacrifices that are made to put on those cases, all in the interest of public safety. And that's what I want to talk tonight. And we'll have questions that will address issues that are important to the office: public safety, protecting the county's interest, and preserving the quality of life that we have here in Cache County. And I'll look forward to addressing those issues later on.
Thank you, Mr. Swink. Now a 3-minute opening statement from Mr. Daines.
Thank you. A lawyer was questioning a coroner, and he asked this question: doctor, how many of your autopsies have you performed on dead people? All of them, said the coroner. The live ones put up too much of a fight. Now, I'm not used to being here on the witness stand. I'm used to asking questions and not having to answer them very much. Hopefully my answers will make better sense than that lawyer's question did. This campaign for Cache County Attorney is a real challenge. It's not in the typical sense, though, of a political campaign. This is the first time in memory that there's been a choice in the fall election. So this is the first debate discussing the role of the county attorney, and this is a discussion worth having. Under Utah's Constitution, all elected officials take this oath. I do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state, and that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity. What are the duties of the Office of County Attorney? Basically, there are two. The first role is that of a public prosecutor. As a prosecutor, the county attorney is an advocate in criminal matters, but he is also a minister of justice with obligations to see the defendants are accorded procedural justice and that guilt is decided upon the basis of sufficient evidence. The second role is that of a civil attorney for the county as an organization. This consists of representing the county in civil court and providing legal advice for the county. The county attorney does not represent the county council or any board or any officer. That way, the county attorney can serve as a watchdog when needed, and when needed, quote, question the conduct of government officials and perform additional remedial or corrective actions, including investigation and prosecutions, unquote. The county attorney must be vigilant and self-disciplined so as to keep his promise to uphold our constitutions and the rule of law while carrying out these two duties. This can and should be hard at times. The Constitution is like an invisible fence. Unless you're shocked by the electrified collar, it's easy to forget the boundaries of the fence. If you're not getting jolted from time to time, it's dangerous to assume that you're staying within the bounds of the Constitution. Maybe the collar needs a new battery. I'll use my 33 years of experience to make sure that I perform my official duties while staying inside the constitutional fence. Thank you.
Thank you for your opening statements. Appreciate that. Now a word about the questions. Some questions were provided by the Herald Journal staff. Other questions were emailed in by Herald Journal readers. And a third source of questions will be those provided by you as the clipboard goes around. It's moderator's choice, but I'll be giving greater weight to people who showed up tonight, and I'll be giving heavy emphasis to the questions there on the clipboard. Let me begin with a general question, and this one would go first to Mr. Daines. The county attorney has varied responsibilities. How would you or do you approach the job as a whole?
As a whole, I think my opening statement covered most of what I would do. I think it's important to focus on the duties of the office like a laser and to make sure that all of your energies and attention are efficiently geared toward fulfilling those duties that the law imposes on you as a county attorney and that you're doing it within the law. And I have six particular things that I would plan to put into place that have to do with how I would initially approach that. I can't know everything before I get into office if I'm so fortunate as to be elected. But there's a saying that you don't tear down a fence until you know why it was put up. So I'll be cautious to make sure that I'm exercising good judgment. But those ideas that I've already put out in a platform are pretty specific about examples of how I would approach the office.
Mr. Swink, 90 seconds. I'll just repeat the question. The county attorney has varied responsibilities. How do you approach the job as a whole?
Approaching the job as a whole takes a great deal of effort and a great staff. There's the civil side, and I happen to have two civil deputies, and we meet every week, Monday afternoons. And we go over the issues facing the civil side of the office. We follow up on issues that come before us. And I found that critical to get the work done is you have to meet with and follow up with your staff. If you don't meet and you don't go over those issues and assignments, they just never get done. And so I found that very productive. We also meet regularly with our criminal attorneys. We meet every month in an early morning staff meeting and at 7 a.m., and it's not the most fun time to meet. But those usually go for at least 2 hours or until everyone's off to court or in other places. And that's a great time to resolve issues that come up. Now, every day we have issues come up. And I'm regularly in the offices of the attorneys. They come to my office, to my chief deputy's offices, and we work through issues routinely. And you have to have a good working relationship with your staff. And as you do and you empower them to make good decisions, they go about and they do it. And I'm proud of our office staff. And the decisions they make and the collaboration that goes on in the office, it's a constant that goes on in our office. And that's how I manage the office, and you empower people to do their job, and we work together, and when there's issues that come up, people call in the evenings and weekends and any time of the night or day, and we work through those issues when they come up. So.
And as the format, I'll remind you of the format, 90 seconds initial response to the questions and then 30 seconds for rebuttal. So we give 30 seconds to Mr. Daines for rebuttal.
Well, I think there's really not a lot more to say than what I said. Certainly I'm committed to helping my clients in my current practice. I'm used to working with other attorneys and professional staff within my office and partnership as it's now constituted, and I would look forward to a good collegial professional relationship with the deputies. They're deputies for the office, and not necessarily my personal bidding. And so I would respect their position that way, and I'm confident I'd be able to work with them.
Okay. I'll remind the candidates to keep an eye on the clock there. That would be helpful. So 30 seconds to Mr. Swink.
Yeah, I just reiterate, building consensus and building working relationships, not only within the office, but with agencies outside of the office. I'll give you one example. We screen cases regularly. All child sex abuse cases go to a multidisciplinary team that reviews those. You talk about issues that are involved in those cases. And so collaboration not only within the office but with outside agencies, and those relationships are really important to effectively prosecute crime, and outside of that to deal with the civil issues in the county.
Thank you. The next question we go first to Mr. Swink. And you just mentioned this. In recent years, the county has prosecuted an enormous number of child sex crime cases. Is there an unusually high rate of abuse in the valley? What can you do as county attorney to curb this trend?
Well, we take those types of crimes very seriously, and they're the hardest crimes to prosecute. One, because of the subject matter, and two, because there's so much on the line. Regularly, they go to trial. And we have seen an increasing trend. And I have to attribute that. We've got to do something differently. I noticed when I got into this profession 17-plus years ago, as I was prosecuting juvenile crime, that there was an explosion of child sex crimes amongst our youth. We have over 100 cases every year of child sex abuse, which is alarming. And when you start thinking 75 of those roughly every year are committed by juveniles, usually on their own siblings or cousins or neighbors, it's alarming. We used to play sports. We used to box in my neighborhood. It was the time of Rocky that was out. And we watched Rocky, and then we went out and we put on our bathrobes and we went into the ring and we fought. Well, children now are seeing more and more graphic material, and it's harming them. And they act out on that. I'm convinced of that. Every sex offender we send to the prison has partaken of pornography. They're addicted to pornography. They just haven't looked at it. They're addicted to it. We've got to do something more. And in our office, we have done education in that area. We will continue to do more and draw more attention to that topic than we have before. That's something that we really need to go to work on, and to protect our children and protect them from the harms of pornography and its consequences and results.
90 seconds next to Mr. Daines. I'll repeat the question. In recent years, the county has prosecuted an enormous number of child sex crime cases. Is there an unusually high rate of abuse in the valley? What would you do as the county attorney to curb this trend?
Well, I'll address the last part of that question first. And that is, I would do my job as county attorney. The county attorney is supposed to prosecute crimes and to do a good job of it, to make sure that there aren't the kind of slip-ups that where somebody who might otherwise be found guilty is somehow let go on a technicality. You have to be very careful to make sure that you're following the law, so that those who should be convicted are convicted. And on the flip side, they're difficult to prosecute for another reason, and that is that sometimes the evidence is not all that certain. So you have to be careful to make sure that when you're prosecuting a crime, that guilt is based on substantial evidence, and that's a particular concern for sex crimes. But in terms of I would try not to step outside my role so that the resources of the office are devoted to the duties of the office.
30-second rebuttal to Mr. Swink.
We're trying to protect the most vulnerable in our community, our children. And our office has a long history of doing that, and doing it well and doing it effectively. And that sometimes means taking really difficult cases to trial. And we're willing to do that to protect our most vulnerable, our children, and we'll continue doing that. I look in the back of the room, and there's a prosecutor here that has taken those cases on, and they're such difficult cases. I have the policy in my office to rotate those attorneys every 4 years just because of the difficult nature of those cases and just the psychological wear and tear. It takes a toll on those that do it.
Mr. Daines, 30 seconds.
I'm afraid I don't have anything to add.
All right. Let me go next to this question, much in the news. On this one we'll go first to Mr. Daines. What are your views on police militarization, including the use of violent raiding tactics and assault weaponry on the homes of nonviolent criminals, and the use of offensive weapons such as assault rifles and armored vehicles as a means to control peaceful demonstrations?
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer, mainly because the question assumes quite a few things to start with, that there is militarization of the police. I read a recent article, and you know, I can't be anything but an observer at present of these things, but I read an article in the Herald Journal responding to that kind of a question, and I really appreciated the remarks that that the Logan City Police Chief made in that article. And his remarks were that the people of Cache County in this instance, because their propensity to be law-abiding is the greatest resource that we have here for public safety. And so anything that would detract from the general populace's interest in continuing to be law-abiding would be detrimental, in my opinion, to public safety. And thank goodness, you know, that we only deal with a very, very small percentage of individuals in the county who aren't law-abiding. Otherwise, the system would break down.
90 seconds on this question to Mr. Swink. I'll repeat the question. What are your views on police militarization, including the use of violent raiding tactics and assault weaponry on the homes of violent, nonviolent criminals, and the use of offensive weapons such as assault rifles and armored vehicles as a means to control peaceful demonstrations?
I'm glad we live in a place where we're not bringing out our armored vehicle regularly. We just don't live in that type of community, and we have law enforcement, quite frankly, that live in our communities and are community members. And as I see them, a lot of people don't see the side I see of them every day. So we were preparing for a hearing. It was a sentencing hearing. There was an agent that broke down and cried because he had to shoot someone. And an errant bullet almost hit one of his fellow law enforcement officers. They care about what they do. Obviously, they're in a dangerous business when people pull guns. I think in our community, we're lucky we don't see that type of militarization going on. I think it would be a rare day. Obviously, we do have standoffs at time where SWAT are called out, but there's always interventions before you pull out the gun and you go in and start shooting people up, and that's been my experience. One quick experience, when I first came here to the Valley, there was a search warrant, and I went to the Logan City Police Department and watched how that search warrant unfolded, and I was kind of excited because I thought we were going to go in and ram down the door and go get the items listed in the warrant. It was totally different. The police were very careful about the time of day and who might be home. They didn't want to upset children because they knew children would be in the home, and they went and simply knocked on the door. And they went in and requested the items, and they were given those. That's the kind of law enforcement that I think is effective, to take the least intrusive means possible, and only in those rare occasions that you would be using any assault weapons. And that's the kind of force we have, quite frankly.
Thank you. 30 seconds to Mr. Daines.
Well, really, I think a lot of that question would have more to do with those who are involved directly in law enforcement, such as the Sheriff's Department or the Logan City Police Department. And I'm not sure, even if I'm elected and in office for a while, I'm not sure how much my opinion about those matters will make any kind of a difference in an outcome. I would be careful to make sure that whatever developments happen in law enforcement are within the Constitution and the law.
Let's see. Started Mr. Daines on this one, so I think we're up to 30 seconds rebuttal to Mr. Swink.
I'd make a call out to our law enforcement because they are careful. They are members of our community, and I appreciate what they do, and I think they do a fine job, and I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Next question, this will go first to Mr. Swink. Is plea bargain fair? Is it just a tool to get a plea to prevent a trial? Will you ever resort to a plea bargain because you are not prepared for a trial?
No. When a plea bargain, obviously they're negotiated settlements, and those occur regularly. Most of the time, you have facts in a case that both sides know what they're heading into and to a trial. And it's usually your worst cases that go to trial, quite frankly, for the state, because people think they have, defendants think they have a shot at beating the state because your evidence, some of it may not be admitted, and they know that there's a chance for them to be found not guilty. So generally speaking, 90-plus percent of your cases, the defense attorneys in the state knows where things will fall out, and in those cases, it's compelling evidence. And it's not going to be, we know what's going into trial, and there's a settlement that's negotiated. And those are proper and right. If we tried every case in the system, the courts quite frankly couldn't handle all the cases that come through. Neither could our office. If we tried the 3,000 cases that we screen each year, or 5,000 cases that we screen each year, if you take in juvenile court, you just simply can't try all those cases. So you have to find some reasonable solution to cases. Other cases just go to trial. Some, there's no negotiating on the state that it's just such a serious matter that it's going to trial. Others, the defense insists on their right to a trial, and you go to trial. So, negotiated settlements are appropriate and right. It should never be done because you're unprepared. It may happen because witnesses won't come forward and testify. There are evidentiary reasons why you may do a negotiated settlement as well.
90 seconds next to Mr. Daines. I'll repeat the question. Is plea bargain fair? Is it just a tool to get a plea to prevent a trial? Will you ever resort to a plea bargain because you're not prepared for trial?
The answer to the last part is no. Are they fair? And that depends on the situation. The Constitution and the law is not as much about what plea bargains are fair, but about how they're reached. So in a healthy system where everything's functioning the way it should, then plea bargains are perfectly appropriate, and the system cannot function without them. In my private practice, I'm a trial lawyer, and it's not very common to go to trial for the same reason, that you need to settle cases, and you can reach settlements that are fair and appropriate, but it has to be done within the context of procedures and safeguards that ensure that everyone is treated fairly in the process.
Very good. 30 seconds to Mr. Swink.
Yeah, negotiated settlements. I had a great professor in law school, Professor Williams, and he talked about settlement negotiations. That was a whole semester on negotiations. And I believe this because I've seen it happen, and Chris would probably agree with me, that if you have two attorneys or two parties that sit down and come up with a resolution, the pie is always bigger than if you go to trial and the parties fight it out. The pie is always smaller. There's always a clear loser. There's always a clear winner. And that winner doesn't win as much, quite frankly, because of all the resources and time that have gone into that. So I think the solutions, in my experience in civil cases, you're always better by having the parties get together and work out a solution. And that's my approach to law.
And 30 seconds to Mr. Daines.
Well, my experience is that when you go to court and you go to trial, I haven't seen many of those experiences where there's a clear winner. A lot of times there are two clear losers on both sides. But again, there are times when trial is appropriate and when it's necessary to go forward, as long as the process is clean and healthy for both the trial, if it has to happen, and for the bargaining positions of the parties going into a negotiation.
Very good. We are approximately halfway through the debate, so let me just reintroduce everyone. I'm Tom Williams, moderating the debate. I'm a program director for Utah Public Radio. Our thanks to Logan Herald Journal for organizing the debate. They're presenting the debate along with Utah Public Radio, and it is a debate between candidates for county attorney. Now we have the incumbent county attorney, Mr. James Swink, debating his challenger, Chris Daines. And we are using questions from Herald Journal staff, questions emailed in from Herald Journal readers, and questions from you. And you still have opportunity as the clipboard is going around to get a question to our candidates. This is being live streamed, the debate is, at hjnews.com, It'll be available thereafter on hgnews.com. And beginning tomorrow, you'll have the debate on our website, Utah Public Radio, at upr.org. So let me begin the second half of the debate by trying as best I can to combine several questions which have come in from various sources. And this has to do with party affiliation. Let me just use this as a framework. This person emailed this in on the Herald Journal's website. I have a question for the debates, especially since one of the candidates is from a third party and another switched parties, as I understand. So I don't know about the accuracy of that, but you can address that. Why are the candidates associated with their respective political parties? Which I think addresses, in general, several of the questions which came in. And so this one would begin with Mr. Daines. 90 seconds.
Well, I think maybe both of those references might be to me about a third-party party and the possibility of switching parties. I'll try to be direct in answering. The party that I am on the ticket for is the Independent American Party, and they're all of nine members, last I checked, of the Independent American Party in all of Cache County. And I became a member of the Independent American Party on March 20th, the date that I filed for office. My policy and my position is that that party affiliation should not matter at all in the county attorney's race. On the civil side, no one's come into my office in 33 years of practice and said, "What party do you belong to?" What they care about is whether I'm a good attorney and whether I can serve them well as an attorney. On the criminal side, it's I think even more critical that no party affiliation taint the process by which we come to office, because everyone expects prosecutions to be fair and to be impartial, and that would imply that party affiliation should not be a part of that. Just as it isn't for the selection of judges, we don't elect them on a partisan basis. And this is my one chance to put in a plug that change in Cache County, so in the future, county attorney's office is nonpartisan.
90 seconds to Mr. Swink. I'll just repeat the last part of that question. Why are the candidates associated with their respective political parties? And could I crave your indulgence to answer at the following question that Mr. Daines raised? Would you be in favor of the position being nonpartisan?
Yeah, I think party politics are really important. You look at the attorney general's race in the state, and I believe there are five candidates from various parties, and what you get with that is you know right away what those platforms mean. Now, with my opponent's party, people may not know what's on that platform. And I would encourage you to go look what's on that platform. If you know what the Republicans stand for, limited government, being frugal with people's money, the platform of when you say Republican, right away it comes to mind what that party believes in. If you say a Democratic Party, you immediately know what that party stands for. I think that's important for individuals to know that's what that person stands for. And it's at the ready, quite frankly. There is no questionnaire for anybody that goes into law enforcement and reports a crime. Are you a legal citizen? That's not a question. Are you a Republican? Are you a Democrat? Or are you a member of the IA party? That's not a question. And quite frankly, when I interview people and hire them in my office, there's never a question of what party they belong to. I've hired Democrats, multiple Democrats, quite frankly. I know what they stand for. They're good people. I know where their political leanings are. But what's most important to me is that justice is meted out fairly and impartially, and the party system is important for our election season. And I would encourage everyone to go look up both parties and see what they believe in. As I look at my opponent's party, I know they don't believe in taking any federal money, and that concerns me because we have one of the most respected and well-run victim advocacy programs in the country, I'd submit. They do an incredible job, and they get federal money. And without that federal money, we'd have no program. And victims are at the heart of what we do in the county attorney's office. So that concerns me a little bit. My party believes in limited federal involvement, but for education, for law enforcement purposes, and for victim services, that's an appropriate use of those federal dollars.
You'll notice I'm giving some leeway with time. Again, I'll ask our candidates to look at the clock. I think we're moving along pretty well, so I think that's all right. Mr. Dane's rebuttal.
Well, I'm not sure it would be good to invoke the Attorney General's race as a good example of how partisanship works in our favor in positions of law enforcement. I'll just make that comment. And the second comment is, if it's not irrelevant to if partisan politics is not relevant to prosecutions and is not relevant to the hiring of deputies, I can't see how it's relevant to the office. I've stated what my platform is, and it's there for all to see. That's what I believe in, and it really has nothing to do with partisan politics.
30 seconds to Mr. Swink.
I'll just say that I believe in my party's platform. We've both identified with a party, and both of us, for the reasons that we're running a campaign, have identified with a party. And it's important to look at that party and what they stand for. And again, I just encourage people to go home and do your homework. This is the type of crowd that would go home and do homework. And I'm not a teacher, and I don't want to give you a homework assignment. But I think that's really important to look at those issues and what those parties stand for and what they're all about.
And we will go as close to 9 o'clock as we can. We have a lot of questions from the audience. That's wonderful. We'll get to as many as we can. The next one up, and this one would go first to Mr. Swink. How would you handle a case that is in direct conflict with your personal beliefs or religious convictions?
Well, it's hard to divorce yourself from those personal convictions. I wouldn't ask anyone in my office to divorce themselves from their personal convictions. I can't think of a case where that's come about, though, quite frankly. I lean pretty strong in making sure everyone has a fair voice in the system. And if people, first of all, we don't investigate crime, so law enforcement actually investigates those crimes and then brings it to our office for our review and for filing those cases. And so there are a lot of things that we may never see, that law enforcement is, you might say, the first judge. And we're the second judge, and then we take it to a third judge or jury, a trier of fact, and they decide those issues. And, you know, I haven't come across anything that has the fact scenario that's been in opposition to my own personal beliefs and my beliefs. I just haven't come across that.
90 seconds next to Mr. Daines to answer the question, which I'll repeat. How would you handle a case that is in direct conflict with your personal beliefs or religious convictions?
I'll say in 33 years of practice that's really a rare situation. And, you know, when you're serving your clients, you serve them even if you don't share their same religious beliefs or their socioeconomic status or you just try to serve your clients as best you can. As county attorney, my client would be county government, and their directions and the goals and directions of county government, it's hard to fathom how those would ever conflict with my personal beliefs if they'd go astray of the law or the Constitution. Then we might have a problem and an issue. But I just can't foresee in that position where, as prosecutor, you would have quite a bit of discretion, and taking directions from your civil client, the county government, just kind of wouldn't come up.
30-second rebuttal to Mr. Swink.
Yeah, we do represent the county council, for instance. We're their council. We're council for county departments as well. This recently, we've had issues where there's been a federal judge came down and said, you can't forbid marriage to anyone. And quite frankly, my advice to the county clerk was we've got to abide by that judge's ruling. We just don't ignore the law. And when a judge says this is the law, we're going to have to follow that. And obviously that case has taken on a life of its own. It was like a tennis ball going back and forth. And we'll follow wherever that tennis ball, we're told to hit it, and we'll follow the law.
30-second to Mr. Daines.
Well, I need to respectfully disagree. The county attorney represents the county government and not the county council, not any county official, not any county department. And the reason why he doesn't is so that if there's something amiss within the county, then he's in a position to, if necessary, look into it and bark like a watchdog would bark and probe. But again, back to the question, though, I just don't see many opportunities for conflicts with my personal beliefs in carrying out my duties as county attorney.
Next question up, will this go first to Mr. Daines. How many felony cases have you prosecuted or defended in the past 10 years? What were the challenges you faced, and how did you overcome them? Mr. Daines, 90 seconds.
Well, I hesitate to get into the particulars of any case because I owe a duty to my clients of confidentiality. I will say very few. I'll admit that my practice in criminal law has been fairly limited, that my focus has been more on civil law, but I'm not unfamiliar with, and I have defended at least one case that involved a felony in the last 10 years. I think that's about all I can say and really be appropriate in terms of my past experience. I'm not sure I remember the rest of that question.
Let's see. How many felony cases have you prosecuted or defended? What were the challenges you faced? How did you overcome them?
Well, again, that I think that would be delving a little bit too much into the particulars of my representation of clients in the past.
Mr. Swink, 90 seconds.
Yeah. You know, much of my career has been involved in prosecuting crimes and taking cases before a judge or a jury that involve really serious harm to our citizens, and those are felony cases. And I'd say hundreds, actually thousands of cases that I've been able to handle. The challenges with that are just the sheer number. The number of cases that come across the desk are enormous. We've screened over 2,400 cases this year in my office. And we have limited resources, and that's one of the biggest challenges. When you have a felony trial coming up and you have several on its heel, managing that calendar is its biggest challenge. Again, especially for the assigned prosecutor who's doing child sex abuse cases, they're lined up one after another, and those cases have so much at stake that there is a tremendous amount of motion work that accompanies them. And so you not only have motion work and you have court appearances, but then you have trials. And so the demands of just carrying a caseload is probably the most challenging feat. Now, we're lucky in our office that when people are under the gun, and we know they're under the gun, people pitch in and try to help. They'll cover a motion calendar. They'll cover a motion. They'll assist each other. And then the other part that might be challenging is working with victims, and we have a great victim services department that helps out with that.
30-second rebuttal opportunity to Mr. Daines.
Well, certainly I wouldn't overlook the resources that are there in the office if I were elected to go there, and I would expect to be working closely with attorneys who have plenty more experience than I do in criminal prosecutions. I don't think I've ever prosecuted a criminal case because I've never worked for the government in all my 33 years of my career. That said, I think it's important to be able to supervise and manage and work with your other attorneys, and I have a proven ability to do that.
Let's see, a rebuttal opportunity, Mr. Swink.
Yeah, I want to go back to victims. I couldn't imagine defending victims in our community without victim services. It's an intense operation, and managing the trauma that has occurred to those victims, and as you approach hearings, that trauma goes up and their anxiety goes up, and that's something that I'm so grateful that we have good victims advocates to help out, because that is really a big challenge of prosecuting those felony cases.
All right. As you can see, we are we're quickly losing time. We have a lot of questions, and as I mentioned, we will go as close to 9 o'clock as possible. Here is a question which came in two or three times in a couple different versions, so we definitely want to get to this one. This one will go first to Mr. Swink. So one version of this, what qualifies you by way of training or experience to handle both civil and criminal matters? Another version of it, what in your career has prepared you for the civil side of the county attorney's work?
Sure, that's a good question. I referenced in my opening statement the opportunity to first of all, go to law school, and you receive some training there, but there's so much more training on the job in the law than you ever get in law school. They teach you basically where to go find the law, and they kind of set you free, and you're on your own, and so much is accumulated through your work experience. When I worked for Springville City, I started to accumulate that civil experience. When I went to work for Judge Granada, I handled both his civil calendar and his criminal calendar. And when cases and motion work came before the court, you're probably aware of this, that clerks do a lot of the judge's work. They do the research. They do the writing. So on property issues and on zoning issues and civil matters, that's what I did for the judge. I researched and helped write those opinions, and we put those out. When I went to Weber County, obviously I did a lot of criminal work, both in the justice court and district court. And when I came to Cache County, I continued that criminal work. Under my predecessor, he integrated me into the civil side of the office, and he made me his chief civil attorney. And I picked up a tremendous amount of experience working with my predecessor, who's a fine civil attorney, and I very much enjoyed learning at his heels. He's a very competent attorney. And the civil side, obviously, the last 5 years, that's been a big part of my day, not only managing a criminal calendar, but managing the civil side of the office, and it's been a good experience.
So I'll repeat the questions to Mr. Daines. What qualifies you by way of training and experience to handle both the civil and criminal matters of the office, and what in your career has prepared you for the civil side of the county attorney's work?
I think that calls for maybe a short bio. I received my legal education in Washington, D.C. at George Washington University. It's a pretty good school, but experience counts for a lot. My first 5 years in practice, starting in 1981, were here in Logan, and it's a general practice. You know, it's kind of hard to survive as a self-employed lawyer in Cache County if you're not willing to do a lot of different things. And then in 1985, from 85 forward to 97, I was 12 years practicing in Houston, Texas, mostly civil work. And then back here from 1997 on in a general practice that involves some criminal defense work, but mostly civil work. So I really kind of developed an affinity and a specialty as I could within my general practice for some good zoning law, which county's civil side is this lion's share, but a substantial amount of the civil work that the county does, and I have been involved in several appellate decisions in the state having to do with that specialty.
30-second rebuttal opportunity for Mr. Swing. Yeah.
Obviously, a primary objective of me, and it always will be, and my approach to the office is protecting the public. And the criminal side is probably the side of our office that people, they're impacted in the biggest ways. And it's critical that we keep that moving forward. Lives are impacted in such tragic ways, and we will continue to do everything we can to protect the community. And protecting the civil side of the county is a very important part of the job as well, and we're working hard on it too.
30 seconds to Mr. Daines.
Well, I'm sure that with the aid of the staff that's already in place in the county attorney's office, that we can continue moving forward and paying attention to fulfilling the duties of the county attorney's office, both on the civil side and on the criminal side.
We believe have time for one more round of questions and then closing statements. And so I think this is a good sort of summing up question for our penultimate round here. So this one goes first to Mr. Daines, I believe. The questioner says, in your opinion, what is the most pressing issue facing our county as it relates to the attorney's office? What are you doing or will do to address this issue?
Well, in my opinion, the most pressing issue is to make sure that the focus of the county attorney's office is on following the law and the Constitution and in conserving and efficiently using its resources to take care of its core duties. That's what I think is the most pressing issue. You know, it's kind of, in a sense, like making your bed or doing the dishes. Nobody notices when you make your bed or do the dishes. They only notice when those tasks don't get done. And so I'm not saying that everything is wrong or that everything that's happening in the county attorney's office needs to be corrected. But I think a healthy focus on those core items and duties would be helpful and would frankly make the substantial budget that's part of the county attorney's office stretch further and go further in fulfilling its core duties.
So 90 seconds to Mr. Swink next. In your opinion, what is the most pressing issue facing our county as it relates to the attorney's office? What are you doing to address this issue?
Yeah, the biggest and most pressing issue, quite frankly, is a financial one. We're doing budgets right now, and we've had a request from the county council to look for ways to cut that budget. I've worked hard, and I've laid a lot on my office staff, quite frankly, as we've transitioned to a paperless office. I'm glad that we have because we're way more efficient than we've ever been before. We couldn't operate without those efficiencies. Cache County is a pretty frugal county. And you compare an office, our office, to other offices with similar populations, and we have half the attorneys those offices have. And I just give a big shout-out to my office staff who's willing to go to new programs and learn those programs, but they have made us so much more efficient. Our legal assistants aren't bait-stamping thousands of pages of discovery and sending it out through via the mail, but we're putting it online, and individuals are coming in and grabbing that discovery. We're moving files around in our office electronically. We're not hand-delivering them anymore, and the attorneys are doing more screening and the paperwork because it's just more efficient than handing it off to your legal assistant. So it's a financial issue, quite frankly, and I've had some headhunters come for people in my office, and that kind of makes me mad. Salt Lake County will pay a little bit more. And so that's another big issue facing the office is keeping the wonderful staff there and paying them a livable wage. And I appreciate what the county council has done to help me do that, and especially recently keep some of our staff who may go elsewhere. But it's a financial issue that I think is facing the office. It's a big issue, and we're doing the very best with what we have.
30-second rebuttal to Mr. Daines.
Well, in the private world, we're used to having, in private practice, having to deal with efficiencies because we're in a competitive environment. So the idea of going paperless in the office, I think we were forced to go paperless more or less by court rule back in May of 2013. And so we've been essentially paperless, even though, in spite of my little binder here, for quite a while. My time's up.
And a 30-second opportunity for Mr. Swink.
Yeah. The efficiency of the office, we've recently had multiple people. We are efficient, and we're not only efficient in our office, but we're the only office in the state that law enforcement actually files their case electronically with us. They don't bring over a paper file. We're the only office in the state, and in the last month, we've had three or four, actually more than that, other county attorneys across the state come to our office to learn what we're doing. We've been filing electronically. There's only a couple of other counties in the state that have done that, but we've been on the breaking edge of that. We've had to make it work and to be more efficient.
Well, we appreciate the debate, and we have now reached the time for closing statements. Just to remind you, we had a coin toss, and we determined that one of our candidates would have the first word, and one would have the last word. So the last word goes to Mr. Daines. So 3 minutes now to Mr. Swink.
Thank you. I appreciate everyone being here again tonight and for the time that you've taken and the interest you're taking in this race. This office impacts all of our lives. Before Scott Wyatt ran for office, there were no rape charges that were being filed. Mr. Wyatt kind of changed that culture, and we've continued that with child sex abuse, with the other crimes that are so devastating, financial crimes. These are very difficult cases. We don't shy away from those difficult cases. We're doing everything we can, first of all, to protect the public. And as I think, I look through a lens in everything I do, and that lens is this. I have nephews, I have nieces, I have children and their grandparents that live here, and everything I do is through a lens of what is in their best interest, what will keep them safe, and what will keep this valley viable, and how can we preserve the quality of life that we have. That's the lens I look through in every decision that I make every day in the office. And what is fair and what is the right thing to do. And that's the nice thing about wearing the white hat as a prosecutor. You don't have to file a case. We don't file cases that we don't think are appropriate. That happens more often than people would know. But you also file those cases that may be really hard, but will have a tremendous impact on a victim who that sends a message to their perpetrator that what that person has done is wrong. And it also sends the message to the victim that you're not at fault here. And so there are weighty matters that go on in the county attorney's office. And that's the lens that I look at those through each and every day. I just like to conclude with this. My time in the law has been spent in public service. From the time I was in law school, trying to help cities and towns and counties be efficient and effectively go about their very important duties. And those duties are primarily protecting the public, protecting the civil interests of the county, and protecting our quality of life, protecting water, protecting access to our roads. As the county grows, that's my biggest fear, is that access to our public lands and other resources will be blocked, and we need to preserve our quality of life. Salt Lake's already trying to take our water, and we will fight like we fought in the last number of years to preserve our water, and we will continue to do everything we can to preserve and protect our greatest resource, which is our public, and our natural resources, which are water and lands and our freedoms here. And I look forward to doing that. I would ask for your support for another 4 years as we continue to move the office forward in protecting the public and protecting the county. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Daines, 3 minutes for closing statement.
Well, I want to make a general statement as to why I'm running. I'm running because I haven't been involved in government up till now, and now is the right time in my life and in my career that I'm ready to serve the public in the capacity of an elected official or a public employee. It doesn't mean that I haven't been serving up until now, serving in some other ways. I don't have the perspective that my opinion of what's right or fair matters a whit. It really is painful sometimes to look at the Constitution and the law and realize that the results of the Constitution and the law may be contrary to what results you would want as an individual. And so there's a real discipline there to say, I'm going to do what's lawful and legal under the Constitution. I'll say also that I don't think the role of county attorney is one of making policy. The legislative body of the county and the executive, they're the ones in charge of deciding what the policies are going to be, and the boundaries of the Constitution are really pretty wide. There's a lot of great things that can be accomplished within those boundaries. And that's not my job as the county attorney to decide what direction we're going to go in terms of water rights or those kinds of things. That's up to the legislative body, and they are the agents for my client, the county government. And I'll be, I'll try to stay within my role. It's dangerous to wander outside your role when you've been assigned a role. And I promise that I will stay within that role. And I believe that I can serve the people of Cache County, who are really the sovereigns of county government under our system, that I can serve them well in that role.
Thank you. This concludes the debate for candidates for the county attorney. Would you please join me in a round of applause for our candidates? We thank you very much. Just